I'm the doctor. These are my new best friends, Ryan, Graham and Yaz.
Hello and welcome to episode 84 of Doctor Who Target Files, reviewing the latest TV episode of Doctor Who, Kerblam, written by Peter McTeague and directed by Jennifer Perrott. This is Mike in Swansea. Hello, faithful listeners.
And hello, this is Alex in Exeter. So, we have a bit of an interesting one this week. Computers taking over the world in a big warehouse and quite a lot of nice little references to the past, I thought, you know, from the Matt Smith and David Tennant era. And I thought on a second watch, it worked really well, I thought. It was actually quite good fun and did quite a good bit of interest and had a good sort of villain, I think. So, yeah, I think it worked quite well for one of his first episodes doing Doctor Who. What do you think, Mike?
Peter McTeague's debut on the TV Doctor Who series. I did have my doubts last week seeing the trailer, Al. I thought it was going to be a sort of meddling, maybe the early seasons of Sylvester McCoy, which I didn't really like. Still don't like that much to this day. You know, I loved season 26, the Fenric, the Battlefield, all those sorts of episodes. It had that sort of vibe about it of maybe a Happiness Patrol in the trailer. But very pleasantly surprised, Al. Certainly on the second watch, I do feel like this TARDIS team feels like the current team more to me now than it has done so far, possibly because I was having a bit of trouble still letting go of Peter Capaldi and the fact we have a whole new format, we have new lenses and everything, although I have enjoyed episodes, but it does totally feel like Doctor Who to me again now.
Yeah, I think this episode was really good because, you know, the team of, you know, companions all have their own little bits to play and they're all doing well, and it's a nice reference, you know, to Ryan's previous job. He knows all about warehouse, that's what he's done, and there's sort of nice things to his sort of dysfraction and how he gets around things. And I thought that was really good, and the team, well, this is, I think, really has come together, and they all, you know, have their own parts, but I know there's still a lot of moaning out there about, oh, it's too many companions, it's this, it's that, you know, we don't like the three companions. Well, I think they work really well with this Doctor, and I think Jodie is sort of definitely come into the being the Doctor, and there's lovely references all, you know, all throughout this episode, you know, to the Fez of Matt Smith and the sort of the, you know, the Agatha Christie bits with David Tennant. And I think, yeah, there was a definite reference with that sort of bot turning up in the TARDIS to you know, the greatest show, you know, the Sylvester McCoy episode we've reviewed in the past, I think.
Reference right from the beginning to the greatest show, the idea of junk mail, but certainly this incarnation, Jodie, a lot more excited about it than Sylvester's seventh Doctor was.
Yes, he sort of, you know, because what's inside, he gets a new Fez, which, you know, I think looks very good on her, and, you know, he's sort of very excited about it being, you know, a package, so people get happy with getting packages, I suppose we do these days, and then you get to the, you know, the little reveal that somebody has sent her, you know, help message, and it sort of goes on from there. I think it just worked really well. I think I was a little bit annoyed with it last night, because I didn't really get it on a first watch, and I watched it today and actually concentrated on it. I think it worked.
Yes, Jodie really is quite possibly one of the geekiest Doctors we've seen in terms of enthusiasm, isn't she? You know, when she receives the package and she says, oh, the Kerblam man.
Yeah, it's so bouncy. It's more, I think that she has more energy than Matt Smith. And I thought Matt Smith was completely manic and bouncy. I think she, in some bits, you know, with that bit when she opens the package and she's so happy it's the Kerblam man. She has so much energy. And I think that's what really gets you through the annoying bits of the companion side, because her energy just sort of pulls you in and you just want to watch her, really, I think.
Yes, and that wonderful toothy grin, made famous in Twice Upon a Time, you know, her first words, but it's a central part of her character now.
I think so, and I think it's just brilliant the way she bounces through things, and then she can do really serious, you know, like later on when, you know, the sort of person you think is maybe the villain, she sort of confronts him, and that's really good as well. So I think there's a really good mixture of all the bits you can do, I think.
And the Fez making an appearance. Do you think they had, did they mention it in the episode? They had the Doctor's, the idea of the Doctor, possibly the 11th on file in Kerblam, and that's why they sent that to him? Or her, sorry,
maybe,
now. Her.
Maybe, there's nothing on file. And, you know, I will have to say this again, but the audio description didn't say she was actually wearing it, that it was the Fez. Well, I sort of guessed it anyway, but I don't know. Maybe they did have a picture of, you know, the one thing she really liked was those Fezzes back in the day. And I can still remember walking around Regen, and that was at the convention, that was one thing they all had to wear that year, wasn't it?
Yeah, we had our Sylvan Affairs, didn't we? We had Katie Manning, various people.
Yeah, it just looks so cool, that sort of hat, doesn't it? Even looks brilliant on Jodie's. I think that was a nice link to the past, and I think those things work well. You know, this Doctor knows, I think she knows more about all her ex-bodies and regenerations than most of them, I think.
And we arrive on the planet Kablam, complete with a very bouncy score throughout from Sagan Akinola.
I really like it this week because it is slightly less sort of synth. You know, we've had a lot of synth from Sagan, but I think there's more sort of guitar and a bit more bass from it this week. So I think it works. You know, he can really do sort of very ethereal stuff, and then when he needs to move it up a pace, he can do that as well.
It reminded me, you know, it had a very sort of 70s almost jazz guitar vibe. I watched the classic movie All the President's Men on Amazon Prime last week, and it put me in mind of that sort of soundtrack, the sort of conspiracy film, that sort of intrigue.
Well, yeah, it has that sort of very what's happening sort of, you know, film as they walk around the sort of warehouse. I think it just works beautifully, and then you get nicer bit ethereal synths what Sagan can do. So I think he's just got it right on every account for this episode, I think.
Then halfway through the episode, it did make me laugh. I've heard a few people on podcasts complaining, it's a phrase I've used, saying that Murray Gold's music was very bombastic in the past of Doctor Who. The Doctor herself actually uses that word when she's had a go at the Julie Hesman-Hull character. Was that too bombastic, she says to Yaz and Ryan. That made me giggle quite a bit.
Yeah, there's some lovely little bits in there, because it could, like, you know, it could go back to how Murray could be occasionally. He went really sort of brass and stringy, and which I like a lot. I think, you know, those bits could be really good. But I think Sagan just gets it at the right sort of level of, you know, sort of pomp and sort of guitars, ethereal bits with the relationship bits, where you're, that's a really good twist what comes later, you know, because you think Craig, the sort of Porter guy, is in love with her, and it's a really good twist later, I thought.
Turning to those guest stars, familiar faces on British TV, Julie Hesman-Hulk from Coronation Street and Lee Mack from No Way Out. Both definitely brought their charm to each role, very similar to roles they played in the past. Julie's role reminded me of the lady she played in RTD's gay drama Cucumber, and Lee Mack was his usual sort of amiable self, wasn't he?
Yeah, he wasn't really doing no more than what he normally does. Well, with Lee Mack, that is enough, because he's just funny and great, and that was quite a nice little thing about his, you know, the character's daughter and all that. And she's just brilliant, whatever she does. You know, I can still remember from when she was in Corrie as Hayley, and sort of really good at doing quite good roles, you know, and sort of being quite fun and, you know, bouncy, another bounciness, really. I thought it worked quite well, those two bits.
I think there's a scene halfway through, you've mentioned the references to previous stories before, where Yaz actually says to the Doctor, or is it Ryan that says, about you're the kind of person who'd, you know, disrupt the wasp's nest, and then she walks away and said, oh, have I ever told you about Agatha Christie and the wasp? Plotting of this one by McTeague did remind me of an Agatha Christie story, as you keep sort of to-ing fro-ing between wondering who actually did it.
Yeah, there's a lovely filter, sort of, you know, it is a whodunit for the whole, you know, episode. You're wondering who's been killing all these people off, you know, is it the robots, is it the you know, the staff, is it the system? And I think that's a lovely twist of that, you know, sort of whodunit thing, what works really well with a great sort of twist at the end.
Pace-wise, I thought it rolled along very well indeed. There was a slight lull in the middle, I think, when we were introduced to the character of Kira. Got to say, I thought the actress performed better on a second watch, but I really wasn't very that impressed with her on the first watch. I thought she was a little bit sort of wooden.
Yeah, I have noticed on the second watch she's slightly better. Well, she is a bit wooden. I even thought Craig was a little bit wooden until the end bit, to be honest. And I know they weren't getting much love, those two characters, on Facebook and Twitter today, I noticed.
Graham bringing in the humour as well in this story, Al, being sort of lumbered with the maintenance job.
Human comedy with Bradley Walsh, as you know, being the sort of mop guy and the cleaner, it is great. And I think, as I know, Ruth off Twitter has mentioned, is sort of, is that a reference to it, sort of Red Dwarf sort of outlook? I think there may be.
Yes, Ruth Wheeler, author friend of ours on Facebook, Al, written the All Aliens Like Burgers, the Trucks trilogy, All Aliens
that's
Like Burgers.
Ones,
yeah,
ones,
recommended,
yeah.
If you can find those online, guys. Very good set of books. But her humour is definitely influenced by being a Red Dwarf fan. And now you've said it, Al, yeah, I thought the idea of the janitor with Lister in that initial Red Dwarf series.
Yeah, it's very good fun, I thought, those bits before. Because you think these, you know, I think that's a really good twist. Because, you know, you think he's just a janitor who's in love with, you know, the other person. And, you know, you can get all the plans and help. And then there's that great twist at the end. I'm not going to say it because it will spoil it. But, yeah, I did agree. Halfway through, you know, he had good pace, like, from, you know, about all the way through to the middle bit, where it sort of did lack a little bit, and then again at the end picked up again with that great twist. So I think not bad. You know, it had a little bit of a lull definitely in the middle, I would agree. And I would agree that those two actors aren't the greatest, I will say that. They're better on a second watch, but I think if you just watched it once, you would think, God, they wouldn't, which they were a little bit.
Yes, but I felt the pace there soon picked up towards the end again with the added intrigue of what the Craig character was doing. What did you think of these Attack of the Clones-esque PS2 video game conveyor belt scene, Al?
I thought that was quite good fun, but, you know, it's there to be a good special effect with the two companions in Craig. That's what makes him out to be more of a friend character, you know, and sort of helping, you know, the other character. But as we know, there's a great twist at the end. I think that worked quite well. Well, it did feel a little bit video gamey, that bit.
Terrence Dix and the likes did it back in the day with Mannequins, and Stephen Moffat did it with Weeping Angels. We now have a scary bubble wrap in Doctor Who, Al. What did you think of that idea?
Well, being a fan of bubble wrap and loving to pop it, I shall never pop bubble wrap again. That was a really good twist, and I know it's explodable bubble wrap, and all humans go to bubble wrap and pop it, and it will end up killing themselves. So I thought that was a really nice sort of, you know, horror sort of twist there.
And was that just one of those Doctor Who teasers at the end where it's left on the floor of the TARDIS after Graham has that temptation we all do to pop it?
I think there's, you know, something. Maybe they could come back later where the bubble wrap can be reactivated or something, maybe. So sort of maybe, I think that's Chris Chibnall, the, you know, writers are thinking, oh, we like these characters quite a bit, so we might bring them back again.
The final twist, Al, where it's revealed that, spoilers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Craig is behind this all. Were you happy with that denouement? You've alluded to Jodie, and I want to say something about her performance in a minute, but what did you feel about that scene?
That wasn't brilliant, but it was quite a good twist, because you weren't expecting it to be him, because, you know, you think till then you think it's the system and it's the robots what are doing, you know, all the killing, and the postmen are doing all the killing. Well, it's obviously, you know, you find out it's him. So I think writing wise that's a good twist. The only problem I have is I don't think that actor pulled it off very well.
Not brilliantly. I don't think he's a particularly sort of old actor, so maybe it's something that'll come with a bit more experience to pull off that sort of scene, Al. But as you said, yeah, I had my feelings throughout, like it was a proper whodunit, like it could have been Julie Hesman-Hart's character, it could have been the guy, you know, in the suit and the beard at one point.
Yeah, I think it would have been much better if it had been either of those two, because you actually, you felt like, you know, you put a lot in with those two characters, where with the Craig character, I just think, didn't really think, I know, it sort of would have passed you by because of the acting was so not the greatest, to be honest, with his acting. But like you said, that might have been his first role, so he might get better.
That's true, Al. But, you know, as you said with Julie Hesman-Hart, as with Lee Mack, they play sort of almost a type. Not that it's not very charming, but it would have been interesting to see if she'd been the villain, how she could turn on a sixpence like that. You know, I didn't watch a lot of Corrie. I mainly saw her in RTD's Cucumber, and she was a very enthusiastic character in that. You know, I would have liked to see her do evil, really.
I think I saw, well, I didn't actually see it, but I heard the reviews when she left Corrie doing the quite a dark play, which she did play quite a nasty villain. So I think she could have done quite a good villain. I think either her or Lee Mack would have been good, because, you know, just to see him do something like that, so I think he could do quite well. I just don't know, this actor who had played Craig wasn't the most believable villain. You didn't really believe that he could be a villain, really. That was my problem with it.
And now I have to mention, Al, the Doctor, the main lady herself, going to be full of praise for Jodie once again. Last night, I think we're really starting to see now her Doctor, what Chris Chibnall alluded to. He's moved away from the, we might have had David Tennant or Matt Smith, and to a lesser extent, Capaldi moved away from this, them sort of warning Craig that she was a Doctor, she was going to do this. You know, she might have led armies in the past. She just seems to very empathically get on with things in an earlier classic series Doctor way.
Yes, you know, she doesn't give people chances, I think, this Doctor now. She just basically said, you know, it's your, you know, you've got no chance, and then blew all the bubble wrap up with him in there and teleported out. So I think, you know, she is maybe a little bit colder Doctor sometimes, a bit more like, definitely like the more classic Doctors, I think, sometimes when it comes to decisions.
And, I mean, are we going to get the type of speech we had from David Tennant in Voyager the Damned? You know, I'm the Doctor, I'm 700 years old. The type of speech we had from Matt Smith, was it Flesh and Stone, The Time of Angels, you know, you don't put me in a trap. Do we need that with Jodie's Doctor? Because she just seems to do it in a more sort of measured way, really. You know, if I think back to Tim Shaw in the very first episode of this season.
I think she does it without having to say it, but I would like, you know, because I know how great an actress Jodie is, I'd like her to see her do one of those big sort of, you know, I'm the Doctor speeches. He's done sort of semi-smaller ones throughout this season so far, I think, what's worked really well. But I think the closest we've got to that was in last week's episode when he did the wedding base. I think that was the closest sort of I am the Doctor speech we've had so far.
Shall we score, Kerblam?
I wasn't a big fan of it. I have to say this when I watched it last night. Well, I watched it again today, and it definitely went up. I think the storyline isn't bad at all. You know, it's got a good pace to it. It's a good whodunit. On script-wise, it would work out as quite a high, maybe a 10 is a script. But then we get down to the actual acting, and I think, you know, the Doctor and the friends are fantastic. And I think person played, I just can't remember her name. It's kind of my person played Hayley in Corrie. You know what I mean?
Julie Hesman-Halk.
Julian Hesley-House, thank you, is absolutely excellent in this. I think the problems it has is the person who's meant to be the villain is not very believable, to be honest. I think he doesn't, you know, it might have been his first acting role, or it might be the way he comes over. I just didn't think, as a villain, he was that villain. So that has sort of let it down a little bit. I think the whole concept of the episode about being, you know, about robots and, you know, taking over the big sort of Amazon warehouses we have these days is a really interesting concept. So I think I'm going to give it, just because the villain wasn't great, and I did like it a lot on the second watch, I think I'm going to give it an 8.
Very good, Al. Yes, I was sort of hovering on the first watch between somewhere probably between 7.5 and an 8, and I think I would have given it an 8. But it just seems to me, as I mentioned at the beginning, Doctor Who has totally arrived this season now. This feels more like a Doctor Who story altogether to me in a certain amount of ways. You know, I have given high scores to a lot of episodes, particularly like Rosa and Demons of the Punjab last week, but all those elements which have been slightly fractious in certain episodes with the increased TARDIS team now, perhaps not getting their moments in each episode, all that seemed to come together this week, along with the pacing. The music was wonderful once again. The direction was great from Jennifer Perrett. Peter McTeague's really put a great stamp with his first script on Doctor Who, a very good effort. So on second watch, I think I'm bumping up to an 8.5.
Well, yeah, I think it is worth that. I would have gone maybe to an 8.5 or 9. I just didn't think that actor who played the villain, Craig, was that great, to be honest. That's the only niggle I had with it, because I think it is a good watch. On a second or third episode watch, you'll think you'll like it even more, I think. So I think it does really well for his first sort of, you know, launch into Doctor Who land.
Yes, we'd love to see him back.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I think he has to come back and do another one, and then, you know, it will be better because he will learn from this one, I think.
We have another different writer next week, and then it's Chris Chibnall for episodes 9 and 10 and the New Year's special, which is going to be counted apparently as part of this series, but episode 11 of this series. You know, I'm worried. I've mentioned in the past some of Chibnall's episodes can be quite sort of bland, as he had that problem before, you know, when we went back in the preview show and looked at 42 and The Power of Three, Al. I'm worried now, will I experience that sort of blandness again when he writes these finale two or three episodes?
Well, my concern with it is that we want, I don't know if it's just me, but with a finale, like the last two episodes, I'd want them to be connected somehow. And I've looked at the scripts, you know, the sort of outlines for 9 and 10, and they're still standalone. So that's what slightly concerns me about them. They sound very good ideas, both of them, but I just don't know if, you know, I think, you know, the last two episodes will be a nice big maybe finale for the season. I don't know if they're going to be like, I think it's just going to be, again, sort of two standalone episodes. And then we have the whole concept of having, you know, on New Year's Day this year, which is, it's nice, but I don't know what it is. I think, might be just me, I think, even though if the episode's rubbish, it's great to have it on Christmas Day. I just don't know if I'm going to have the same buzz about it on New Year's Day. That's how I feel, basically.
Well, people are speculating it might be just set on New Year's Day, and it might be just a one-off for 1 year, so we'll just have to see, Al. But other Doctor Who news-wise, Starburst magazine called up the BBC press office last week, and they confirmed that we will be getting 10 more episodes autumn 2019, because there have been various rumours about a bit of a hiatus, and perhaps Chibnall was only going to do three series with Jodie, and perhaps they would have 18-month gaps in between. But good news, not confirmed by the Beeb press-wise themselves yet, but if true, then good news all round, another series next year.
That is great. I had seen that as well. But have you also seen this sort of rumour that's been going around that Jodie and him are only going to do next season, and then it all be, you know, leave and all start again from scratch, apparently? Well, I think that's just a rumour in the press, I think.
Well, I do wonder, with the amount of negativity you're getting from some quarters about this series, as we have done ever since Jodie was the first female Doctor cast, that people are sort of exaggerating things. There have been various whispers that Chris Chibnall hasn't been happy with the BBC, or the BBC haven't been happy with him for whatever silly reason, because it seems to be getting wonderful ratings, which is seems to be the ultimate thing throughout Doctor Who history that has kept it going, along with the fabulous merchandising and the fact the show makes money in the States now. So I can't see why he would, Al, you know, but, you know, apparently it's been rumoured that if Chris goes, then Jodie will go because she'll only want to work for Chris. So, yes, those are the rumours at the moment.
I just think, you know, what, you know, it'd be very stupid to do. I don't understand, because it's getting, you know, superb viewing figures for, you know, on a Sunday night. It's always been either like fourth or third most watched thing, you know, even this week with big things like, you know, I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, which started in England, which has John Barrowman, well worth a watch. It still was number fourth on people watching it actually on TV, and I expect with catch up and everything, it will go up to like number three or second, really. So I don't understand, because it's been hitting 8.2 every week, which, you know, for Doctor Who is fantastic.
And apparently Starburst were told Starburst were told by the BBC press office that production was starting this week, so presumably today.
Well, it'll be interesting to see, because it's blowing cold out there again. They always like to throw Doctor Who out into freezing weather conditions to film. But yeah, I hope it's all rumour based. I think, I don't know who's been paying, because the Red Tops this season seem to have a real hate campaign against this season and Chris Chibnall and Jodie Whittaker. So I don't understand, because it is getting fantastic viewing figures, and not just here in America, and it's getting even better, I think. So I don't understand. I think, I don't know if it's the BBC or it's some people paid to basically make it look rubbish, basically.
Well, the show has been back, not with a full series each calendar year, but has been back on air since 2005 now. Various showrunners and incarnations of the Doctor. And eventually, you know, in this country, as it happens, tall poppy syndrome, the Red Tops are going to go for it eventually. They will find any sort of angle.
Well, yeah, I think that's the case at the moment. They are going for it like no man's business, which is ridiculous, really, because it is really good this season. And yeah, it's bound to be a bit hit and miss sometimes, the episode. I don't think there's really been a really, really terrible episode so far. You know, I think it's just let it have its space, and I think, you know, it will hopefully, you know, it won't affect the way Chris Chibnall feels. I know he's sort of mentioned he's not very happy with the way it's been treated, but I think the rating figures are great, and that's all, you know, when he looks back on it, you'll see every week it hit 8.2 million. So his move from Saturday to Sunday has worked, basically.
I wasn't sure if it would, but I'm glad to have been proved wrong. It certainly has. You know, I don't find myself sort of yearning. The odd tiny yearning in the first few weeks, I thought, oh, it's Saturday, Doctor Who tonight, oh no, I've got to wait another day, but no, it just seems a perfect spot for it.
Sunday is perfect, and I know they've moved it back by about half an hour because of some reason, but it hasn't moved again, so it was staying in the half six slot, I think, for the last couple of episodes, which is still fine, and it sort of needs that permanent slot, so I think that it has worked on a Sunday, and I think more people seem to like it on a Sunday than a Saturday.
It was noted, listen to the excellent Radio Free Scaro, Canadian podcast this morning. They noticed that the last few Christmas specials have been sort of shifted around quite a bit on Christmas Day, so perhaps we'll get a good slot on the New Year's.
Well, yeah, I was about to say that, actually, because they've sometimes been like on 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. It does sort of get moved around. And funny enough, that is to do with the programme. It moved itself from Saturday to Sunday, which is Strictly Come Dancing. That would be the problem on Christmas Day. That would get the sort of spot where main spot, and then Doctor Who normally has to work around that.
Yes, Al, anyhow, looking on a bit of Doctor Who news, the overnights for Kablam are 5.93 million, a 28.5% share of the evening TV audience, and it's the fourth highest rated of the night, so maintaining a good standard again, hopefully get up to about 7 million by the time catch-up is added.
I think it will, because, you know, it catch-up normally adds about another about a million and a half to two, I think. So I think it'll be up to about 7.5 is my estimate, I think. And that is really good for Sunday, basically. You know, only things that seem to do better than that, I think, are like Strictly, or, you know, that gets lots of viewers, or just starting this week was I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. I've got 11.9 in Britain, which I think a lot of people watched it for John Barrowman antics, I think.
And did you see the lovely Children in Need segment this year on Friday for Doctor Who?
I did. How sweet was that? It was really, really, really good. It was very tear-jerking. I had a few tears there, because it was just so... That wasn't like, you know, the Doctor or Jodie Whittaker was going because she had to and being actors. You could actually see what she was really, you know, getting involved with the child who they were talking to as a mammoth Doctor Who fan. And then just having to, you know, just feeling the way, you know, her warmth what came over, I thought it was a really, it was very sort of smoltzy, but it was, I thought it was great.
No, it's just wonderful, you know, the Capaldi doctor said be kind, and this is the epitome of kindness with this show, you know. We had a young girl, her name was Anna, who suffers from cystic fibrosis, being invited onto the set in Cardiff from a video message from the episode she watched, and they presented her with a mini sort of 13th Doctor outfit, didn't they? And she got to meet all the cast and crew. What a lovely segment.
It was just brilliant. You think the poor child has to take like 36 tablets. No, I take like two and that's enough for milk. 36 tablets. You think she wasn't grumpy or miserable. She was just getting on with life. And then her, you know, being like that, she loved Doctor Who. And just the way, you know, the cast looked after, and, you know, they were just great with her, you know, and just love. I don't know, just love what came off that show. So I thought that Brit was just brilliant.
Continues to attract new viewers. 55 years on, it's wonderful.
Definitely, definitely. And it's just, you know, it just shows that the love of that programme to sort of people going through hard times and sort of how they get through it by watching Doctor Who. So I thought it was great. You know, it wasn't, you know, I thought they were going to do like a special thing for it. I think that was even better, basically, you know, sort of showing connection with people, I think.
Great stuff, Al. Do you have any media recommendations for this week? Or any Big Finish news first?
Well, Big Finish news is they've just released the Sylvester McCoy meets Tracy Child's character Klein again, which is going to be very good. I think that's called Warlock's Cross, I think that's called. And out this week is their new unit box set with Gemma Redgrave, which is called Unit Revisitation, I think, which has the lovely Wirren in it, and lots of things what the Master has left for them. But media recommendations, I went and did the insane thing on Thursday and Friday, you're seeing the new brilliant Fantastic Beasts film, which I went and saw my brother at midnight and was absolutely excellent from start to finish. It's been getting an absolute hammering by the critics, but my advice is don't listen to the critics. If you're a mad Harry Potter fan like me and you've read all the books and you've watched all the films, you will absolutely love it, because it is just wall-to-wall Potter references. And the thing that blows me away, I'm not going to say it, there's one bit at the end where you think, blimey, how much the CGI and special effects has come along in 2 years from the first Fantastic Beasts film to this one. It's amazing. There's one bit near the end where they have this sort of mammoth CGI effect and it looks stunning.
Absolutely wonderful. I've actually just noticed as well, Al, on the Big Finish page that they are returning to make new audio episodes of The Avengers, the 60s series, not the Marvel characters.
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet. What are they doing?
They are doing The Avengers, the role of legendary dapper spy John Steed, originally played by Patrick McNee, of course, will be reprised by Julian Wadham, who starred in the English Patient movie and The Iron Lady and Outlander TV series. Olivier Poulet will be reprising her role as Emma Peel from the Big Finish Avengers comic strip adaptations.
That was really good. Yeah, I have bought the Avengers box sets. They're sort of the ones they did with all the scripts that never got done. They are really good, so I will be getting that, definitely. But we also have to mention that from the success of Big Finish Day, which has happened in November, there is a new one coming in Derby in June 2019, I think. And I think they're planning to do one maybe in November as well. There's tickets, I think, are meant to go on sale this week, I think, from Derby Quad's website. If you Google Derby Quad, you'll find them.
Yes, and I did notice a tweet earlier on today. They've put that back a week sensibly now, so it doesn't clash with the Download Festival in nearby Donington.
Ah, is that why they've done it? Because I'm doing... The only thing I've got on in June is I've got tickets for Muse in London, so that's what I will be doing in June.
Entertainment-wise, Al, I had a trip to King's Cross in London last weekend to watch the first live recording of the excellent Star Wars podcast, Blah Wars. Very enjoyable. Got to meet the presenters. We went along to North Down, which is a very small venue, very intimate, about 40 people, a sellout there, and it was a wonderful occasion. Had a few drinks with the presenters afterwards in the pub just across the road, and had a little chat with John, who presents it. He's a big classic Doctor Who fan as well, and he said perhaps he'd like to join us one time for a review in a future episode. He did mention he loved Horror of Fang Rock, but I said we'd already covered that one, but I suppose we could do a little special looking at the TV version of that again, Al.
Yeah, but most definitely. That would be great fun. We have to do that at some point, because while we've been doing these specials, there has been quite a few Target books come out as audiobooks. I know, I think I brought Caves of I'm going to pronounce it wrong, Anzadi, the last Peter Davison episode. That's out as an audiobook now. And I think The Mutants has come out as well. So there's a few things we need to discuss once we get through all the great new series. So that would be good fun, because do they mention much about the new film, or is it to do with old Star Wars stuff?
No, it's all aspects of the franchise. There's two main presenters, and they're joined by two others certain times, and they do commentaries of the films, new and old. Very, very full of banter. It's very, very good humoured.
Well, that's how all podcasts should be, you know, a bit of humour there. I know Film 9 is looking very good. I hope we'll get a title and a trailer, I think, by the Super Bowl. I think that's the plans, isn't it, I think?
Yes, just enjoying the end of the first season of Lucifer on Amazon Prime. I know there's two more seasons on that service, and Netflix have snapped it up and renewed it now for a fourth season.
I'm trying to think, what have I been watching? I haven't been watching much on Netflix. I must catch up, because it's going to be quite a good bit on there, I think, now at Christmas, when I normally sit down and blurs on the Netflix and Amazon Prime. I think the new Coldplay film, what was sort of at a couple of the screenings last week, has gone straight to Amazon Prime, which I need to have a look at. And did Fantastic Beasts, which is absolutely excellent. And I'm looking forward to, I don't know what film I would like to see. Overlord, which is maybe a good zombie film, but I can't find a screening. Normal problems being in a small town with small cinemas. I'm trying to think, what else have I been watching? Oh, I've been watching the excellent John McCary, The Little Drummer Girl, which is very beautifully shot, and it's, you know, sort of spy thing set in the 70s, so he's John McCary, and that's been great. TV you shouldn't watch, what I enjoyed, like, which is Made in Chelsea, and Escape to the Chateau, which is like this thing where this couple, who are very much like my mum and dad, bought a chateau in France and have done it up, and it's hilarious, basically on Channel 4, both those things. So I don't think, not a great TV. I did what Get Me Out of Here last night, that's because of John Barrowman going in, which was hilarious.
Yeah, the one movie I'm looking forward to out, it may be this week or next week, is Creed 2, the latest Rocky sequel, which sees the return of Dolph Lundgren as Ivan Drago. So looking forward to that.
I think Creed 2 is out this week. I think it's on Thursday, actually. Is Sylvester Stallone still in there? Is going to be in it again?
He certainly is, and there's a bit of a standoff again between him and Drago in the trailer, so that looks good. But tomorrow night, I'm going along with my friend Lee to 4K restoration of John Carpenter's Escape from New York, so looking forward to that.
Is that why it's coming out on 4K Blu-ray? Because
yeah, they brought four of his films out again. I think not Halloween. It's They Live, Escape from New York, The Fog, and another one. I can't think of the other one.
Yeah, they're putting them all out in 4K. They look stunning. I did notice that I haven't got it yet. They brought out the Christopher Reeve Superman now on 4K this month, I think.
Oh, wonderful. I'd like to see them having it in the cinema over here. They haven't announced it yet, have they?
Not as far as I know, but the Blu-ray 4K, this is worth getting, because it's got absolutely tons of extras on it, apparently.
Yeah, it's such a poignant film now. The two main stars both gone now.
I know, it's just brilliant. It's basically your first ever, you know, you wouldn't have half the Marvel stuff without that film, basically. And it is really good still. So me and my brother will get it on 4K, because we want that in the house, because it is brilliant, that film is.
You can overlook those effects nowadays, but it's just the charm is there, the leads, the acting is wonderful.
It is great. You can get by when, you know, Christopher Reeve as, you know, Clark Kent Superman was just brilliant, you know, for back then. It was really good.
So next time we're returning to Historicals on Doctor Who, the Witchfinders episode, with a bit of a special guest star, Alan Cumming. What did you make of the trailer? Looking forward to this one.
Yeah, I think it looks really sort of, you know, historically sort of dark, really good. I hope it's not too, because there is a slight chance of campery there, you know, like they did with, you know, Robin the Sherwood one. But I think, you know, this is going to be quite dark, quite moody. I hope, you know, they immediately think the Doctor and Yaz are witches, and maybe try and, you know, put them on this, you know, stake or drown them, that whole stupid test what they used to do back then for witches in the Jacobean period, you know, the sort of, you know, if you sank, you were a witch. If you didn't sink, you were a witch. So you were sort of damned from start to finish, basically. And then, yeah, I think it looks really, I'm hoping it's really dark, and maybe Sagan will do lots of sort of harpsichord, sort of nice sort of synth things, and sort of state the period. I think it looks an interesting one.
I think Graham will be the one probably making a Monty Python Holy Grail reference. Does the witch weigh more than a duck?
Oh, it's got to be done. It's either going to be Graham or Ryan who will make those Monty Python references, I reckon. Next time on the Target Files podcast, we will be discussing The Witchfinders, written by Joy Wilkinson and directed by Sally Aprahamian. You can, of course, reach us on Twitter at DW Target Files or on Facebook at our page. Please rate and review us on iTunes if you've listened to us there. Thank you very much for listening.